Welcome back to the Uncharted Podcast. This is Poya, and I have my good friend Ryan New, who's the founder and CEO of Vendor. And you know how we like to kick it off, so we're going to jump right in. Ryan, we'd like to kick it off with a quick personal as well as business bio. So give our listeners some context on who you are.
Yeah, for sure. So I was born in Michigan in a town called Ypsilanti. And if we were on video, I'd be like holding up my hand and like pointing to the Mitt, the Michigan Mitt, to show you like where that is. That's what all of us Michiganders like to do. But in fifth grade, I moved to Ohio, just south of Cleveland. And so Midwesterner. And growing up, yeah, so I've got an older sister, a couple years older than me. She's a best friend, and she now has three kids. Also super close with my parents. So, you know, just really fortunate on the family front. And, you know, I think back to, since this is a business conversation, I think back to I think I was in fourth or fifth grade, and for Christmas, I asked for an E-Trade account, and I ended up getting it. And I stayed up all night that night, and I was placing all these like future trades, like for with the market opening the next morning. And I was all excited, and I was getting all these like pink sheet stocks and everything. And then the market opens, and all of a sudden my balance went from, it was like $100 E-Trade account. My balance went all the way down to zero, because I spent all the money on trade fees. And so when I think about my childhood, I've always been like fascinated by business. And when people would ask me like what I wanted to do when I grew up, I always said I wanted to be a business person. And so it started young, and here we are.
What's the one skill or experience that you look back on that you're like, wow, this is the one thing that's really helped me in my current role today?
If I go way back out of school, so I was an accounting major. And so right after I graduated, I worked for KPMG for about 2.5 or 3 years. And what I quickly learned at KPMG is that I was not designed to be an accountant. I wasn't passionate about it. I wasn't good at it. And I eventually left, and I went into sales. And I spent about 6 years at HubSpot, when HubSpot was about 200 people when I started, and ended up seeing that journey through IPO and thousands of employees. And at HubSpot, I stumbled into people management for the first time, which I'm actually really grateful for, because, you know, it's really hard to get your first people management job, because usually for managers, people are like, oh, tell me about like why you're qualified to be a manager. And if you've never done it before, are you actually qualified? Right? You're likely not, or at least it hasn't been proven yet. And HubSpot had this ethos where they would take a shot on people. And so if you were a great individual performer and you wanted to get into people management, they would give you a chance. And if you thrived, terrific. If you didn't, you can probably just go back and be a great individual contributor again. And so I think of one of like the most pivotal moments in my career, it's getting into people management for the first time while I was at HubSpot. And I was managing a sales team. And I think back of that time like very fondly, but it was also terrifying. Because I'm guessing some others have had this experience in the past, but as an individual contributor, you're used to controlling your own destiny. And the moment I became a manager, I was just obsessed with trying to make other people successful by doing it for them. And I inherited a team that had been struggling. And what I quickly realized is that doing the work for others is actually not great leadership. You're actually doing them a disservice. And I looked around the team, and a lot of our best people actually wanted to go to different teams, because they saw that I was spending all of my effort doing the job for people that were underperforming. And so some of the best leadership advice I ever received when it comes to people management is it's bucketing your team by A's, B's, and C's. The A players are people that like your job is to truly get out of their way, ask how they want to be coached. Your job with the B's, they need confidence. So your job, this is the bucket where you're really coaching. And oftentimes the B players believe they're a C, but they're not. They actually have an opportunity to be an A. And so your job is really to build the confidence, coach them into A's. And the critical part here is then there's a bucket of C players. And it's just the wrong fit. The C players oftentimes think they're an A, but they're not. And so they really struggle. They don't struggle with the confidence. They struggle with the coachability. And when I received that advice, it totally changed my perspective on management, where it's really not my job to fix it for everyone. My job is to empower and coach, and also to identify when the opportunity is not the right opportunity for someone. And I'm really grateful for my time at HubSpot, and especially for, you know, for them taking a leap of faith on me.
Given that you guys have grown so much, I'm sure in the early days, you've had to put people in these roles of player coaches, where maybe they've had to carry a bag, but at the same time, they've had to train, manage other people. Like, what tactical advice do you have for those folks?
In our earliest days, I think of one of our team members, Sam. And Sam was one of the earliest members of the team at Vendor, and he led customer success. So he was the head of customer success, and that team grew rapidly. And this was the first time Sam was managing people. The team grew rapidly, and he did an incredible job. So I was like, Sam, take on more and more and more. What he realized is that actually he wanted to do something different. And he actually wanted to be a salesperson for the first time. And he thought he could. And I thought he could too. And so he left from head of customer success at Vendor to, he jumped over to the sales team. He's now our number one salesperson by a mile, right? In terms of performance. And so I really like those stories motivate me when someone has the opportunity to try something. And if they love it, terrific. Let's keep doing more of it. If they don't, or if they're bored, or if there's another opportunity that they want to get their hands on, like that's where people thrive. It's really, it comes down to what you're passionate about. And I really respect the people that are passionate about people management. And I really respect the people that are passionate about hitting a number or just coding, or like building the platform. It's, I think of like shower thoughts, right? For me, it's like, what am I thinking about beginning of the day in the shower? Like, where's my mindset? That's what you should be doing all day long, in my opinion, because that's what you're truly, it's where all of your care comes from. And the way to find that is by doing a lot of different things and see really where, what lights you up in terms of passion.
Talking about Vendor, what was that the opportunity or endeavor that you decided to pursue?
So I lived the problem of being a salesperson, and I've sold at great companies with great products. HubSpot was one of them. Envision was another. And I kind of like try to unpack that and say, okay, I'm selling a great product, yet it's taking me 30 to 90 days to close a deal. That's the average sales cycle in SaaS. 80% of the prospects I'm speaking to don't end up buying, right? So the average close rate in sales, SaaS sales, is like 20 to 30%. And to then find a great salesperson took me 6 months, getting them productive another 6 months. So like the inefficiencies of sales, I think is just fascinating. It's mind-boggling. And yet, companies, in order to grow, they have to build large sales teams. There isn't a better way. So if you want to grow and double or triple your ARR next year, you're going to have to hire a bunch of salespeople, a bunch of BDRs, a bunch of marketers, and you're going to spend a lot of like many, many marketing dollars. And then you're going to hope. And so I lived this problem of hoping that I would achieve quota as an individual contributor, and then hoping that my team or division would be able to attain quota. And I just, there's gotta be a better way to this. Like, sales shouldn't be that hard if you're selling a great product. And so that's where the whole concept came from. I thought about it while I was at HubSpot and envisioned this future world where you could fix sales by changing how people buy is where it started. And then when I left HubSpot, I decided to do one other stint at a software company because I wanted to see enterprise sales. And that's when I went to Envision. And what I realized there is that, you know, whether you're selling to small companies or big companies, the buying process is fundamentally broken, which leads to the inefficiencies of the sales motion. And, you know, I would say from a data perspective, the stat that baffles me is that, you know, sales and marketing expense is the number one cost center for technology companies, meaning you have to spend more selling and marketing your product than building it. But imagine this future world if the best product's just one, right? If you could fix the distribution of SaaS or the distribution of software, I think you could unlock some magic for customers. Specifically, the price comes down because it's cheaper to distribute. You don't have to spend billions and billions of dollars on the sales and marketing motions. So in a future world, I think we can actually 10x the quota of salespeople by fixing the distribution of software.
How has the vision from your perspective changed since day one?
Yeah, well, I mean, day one, we were viewed as negotiators. We were viewed as people that are out there to make salespeople less efficient because we're inserting ourselves into the middle of the transaction. And as a salesperson myself, I totally get that, right? The moment that a new party is introduced, you've got the feeling that it could jeopardize your sale. But what I'm hopeful that we're proving is that our involvement is actually to expedite the process. It's to go from a 90-day sales cycle down to a 5-day sales cycle, right? It's to help people stop getting stuck in legal, right? At the last day of the month when you're trying to hit your quota and the buyer's not picking up the phone, like vendor does pick up the phone. And so our evolution is a natural one. I think a lot of it comes with the leverage and the amount of buyers that trust vendor to procure software. That's when we become more and more relevant to salespeople. And I think a lot of them are starting to see the light that, oh, wait a second, vendor's involved. That means I actually am going to get the truth, even if it's the hard truth. Vendors involved, that means if I produce a fair price, this deal will fly through the procurement cycle versus I don't have to play a game any longer. So it's been a natural evolution. And when I think forward into the future, when every company uses vendor to buy, that means that salespeople can just go there and they can find their next customer via vendor because that's where the buyers already are.
As you share, I sense this customer empathy. Where does that come from?
Yeah, you know, I think there's one core advantage that we have when it comes to customer empathy, and it's how we started. We started by doing the work with our customers. You know, we started the company without a product. And by doing that, we learned exactly what our customers care about, what keeps them up at night, and what's within our control to alleviate those problems. And we've had that ethos since day one, even though now today our product does a lot of the magic versus people. And so we had this unique opportunity by doing the work, and like Paul Graham's famous, you know, do the things that don't scale. For us, it's just core to who we are. It's part of our DNA because it's part of our founding story.
And talking about going from founder to becoming a leader, as you guys have scaled, how has your role as a leader evolved?
The evolution of leadership, I've experienced it firsthand because we went from a company of one to a company of over 250 in 3 years. And so I've had my own masterclass just by doing and learning. And you know, I think the first is conscious leadership and being more interested in like learning than being right. And what I think back to our earliest days, it all came back to like inspiration, right? So in our earliest days, I would inspire by doing. And I tried to inspire the team by doing things that they felt might be impossible. And looking back, I think it's like getting into Y Combinator. That felt impossible, but it became possible. Our second customer, when we were a team of two, was a public company. We didn't even have a product at the time. That felt impossible. We made it possible. And then as we started getting bigger, I wanted to inspire through teaching. And so this is when I think back, it's almost like I was operating as like a first line manager. And as we found early product market fit, my leadership style shifted to teaching. And our first team member, Jeff Swank, the evidence here is that he actually became a much better negotiator, which we call internally our buyers. He became a much better buyer than I ever was. Right? So I was able to teach him to actually be better than me. And so, and then you know, flash forward, now we're a larger company and now it's all about empowering. My job for the most part is to get out of the way of the best leaders, right? And to do so, I think it's really important at the company for everyone to have an abundance mindset when it comes to opportunity. And if we've done our job or if I've done my job as a leader, amazing people will have no shortage of opportunity at the company. You can write your own playbook here. And I get a lot of my inspiration back from that first time that you know someone at HubSpot gave me my first people management opportunity. I want to create that opportunity for others here. So it's been an evolution from inspiring through doing, inspiring by teaching, and then inspiring by empowering.
I'm inspired and empowered. This was motivating, man. Not only are you hitting those milestones, but you're also an inspiration to hopefully a lot of listeners moving forward on this show. Well, Ryan, this has been a fantastic episode. But before we say our goodbyes and thank yous, one of the questions we'd love to ask everybody is, if you could go back to any time, what would the wiser, older Ryan, what piece of advice would you give your younger self?
So I've always struggled with patience. And but when I look back, I've found a lot of my biggest learnings came from times when I was doing something that I didn't want to do. And like, for example, when I was a public accountant, I was just trying to run away from that as quickly as possible. I ended up staying for a couple of years and actually learning quite a bit. I also learned what I didn't love, which was incredibly, incredibly powerful. And the same thing has happened throughout different parts of my career. And all of those moments in the aggregate gave me the strength and awareness to build a company. And if I had jumped to these things too early, I don't think I would have succeeded. And so for me personally, I would tell my younger self, continue to be patient and continue to find the lesson in everything you're doing, because it'll likely play some sort of role, potentially a pivotal role in your future.
Thanks for paying it forward, and love what you're doing, and continue to empower and inspire.
Absolutely. I had fun. Thank you.